Welcome to the FinTech One-on-One podcast. This is Peter Renton, chairman and co-founder of FinTech Nexus. I've been doing this show since 2013, which makes this the longest-running one-on-one interview show in all of FinTech. Thank you so much for joining me on this journey. Before we get started, I want to remind you about our comprehensive news service. FinTech Nexus News not only covers the biggest FinTech news stories, our daily newsletter delivers the most important FinTech stories into your inbox every morning with special commentary on the top story of the day. Stay on top of FinTech news by subscribing at news.fintechnexus.com/subscribe. We have a very special guest on today's show. I'm delighted to welcome Mark Gould. He is officially known as the Chief Payments Executive at the Federal Reserve Financial Services. Most people think of him as the head of FedNow, and that is what we're going to be talking about today. We are doing a deep dive into FedNow. We cover a lot of territory in this podcast. We talk about the adoption, obviously, how the rollout has been going, and the speed with which that is happening. We talk about what's involved in signing up for FedNow. We talk about sending and receiving instant payments. We talk about how Mark is pitching FedNow to banks today. We discuss how fintech companies should be thinking about FedNow. He has some interesting things to say there. We also talk about RTP and their relationship with the other instant payments network, and much more. It was a fascinating discussion. Hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to the podcast, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so you've been at the Federal Reserve a long time, but can you just take us through some of the highlights of your career to date before you took this position you're in now?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. And thanks for having me on the show. It's great to be here. One thing I want to emphasize right at the outset, everything that I say today are my own comments. They don't necessarily represent the views of anyone else in the Fed or the organization itself. So with that out of the way, as I look back, I've had the opportunity to do just about everything in my career at the Fed. I started here as an entry-level analyst right out of college. And over the time, I grew into various leadership roles in operations, payments, technology, strategy. Ultimately, I wound up having the opportunity to run our national cash business and to serve as the CIO, the COO, and even a short stint as interim CEO for the San Francisco Fed. And when I look at the picture, I think it was a Polaroid picture the person in HR took of me on day one at the Fed. I absolutely would not have envisioned myself sitting at the FOMC table one day, even in an interim role. But I'll admit that was both super fun and incredibly nerve-wracking.
Right.
As I look back, I've had basically, as I think about it, several different occupations within the span of one career. And that really prepared me well for my current role, which, you know, being responsible for the Fed's full portfolio of payment services. And, you know, why do I think that? Well, looking back, I've just had a front row seat to all kinds of change over the past 30 years in the payments business. I think about check processing, really kind of where I started. I mean, I witnessed the run up to what turned out to be peak check processing days, watching the transition to digital image exchange and ultimately, you know, clearing all checks electronically. That was a move accelerated by 9/11, which itself was a pretty traumatic event. ACH, I remember early in my career watching couriers pull up to the back of the bank and drop off these big reels of magnetic tape, which was how ACH transactions were loaded and exchanged, and ultimately watched that become electronic, completely electronic. And then we saw the rise of same day and more exchange windows and things like that. Cash. I mean, cash has, you know, undergone several developments. We've new banknote designs, new security features to thwart counterfeiters. And I think what most people would be a surprising amount of technology built into to cash. And now we see the evolution of real-time payments, you know, going, you know, not just from Fedwire, our large dollar, systemically important system, to now having FedNow in the market for instant payments that I think of as kind of on a more everyday sized basis. So I've seen a lot of change. Change isn't new to me. And that's actually one of the reasons I'm super excited about the decade ahead, because I see tons of change on the horizon. I have to think the next decade, actually, we might see more change than we've seen, even in the past couple of decades.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, for sure. So before we dig into FedNow, can you kind of take a step back and explain exactly what the Fed's role is when it comes to processing payments and how it works within the banking system and with all of its member banks?
You know, I think a lot of people don't understand the Fed very well, period. I think, you know, if you do word association with the Fed, people might say, you know, Chair Powell, or they might come up with one of the former chairs, or they might say monetary policy or interest rates, maybe, you know, safety and soundness of the banking system. But I don't think a lot of people would probably come up with payments as a role of the central bank. But it really is. So what do we do? We basically clear, a large number of payments every single day. We settle about $5 trillion a day in payments across our various platforms. We serve over 9,000 financial institutions in doing that. And we have just shy of 2,000 people across the country in all 12 of the Federal Reserve Bank locations that perform this service. So, you know, we offer a full range of services, from check clearing, ACH, Fedwire, and now instant payment services. When I think about all of those payments, one thing that I try to keep in mind is there's a story behind every single one of those payments. You know, we tend to, you know, focus on the big macro numbers, but, you know, it's a lot of it's tuition payments, it's paychecks, it's, you know, somebody's house payment, maybe paying the babysitter. It's a lot of those things that that we facilitate. And so our goal is to offer services that are really resilient and very trustworthy and reliable, because people all around the country are counting on them.
Okay, so let's talk about FedNow. We're recording this on February 15th, and would love to kind of get a status update. I think I was reading an article earlier this week that said that number of banks now is somewhat equivalent to RTP. But can you just give us an update on where are we at with FedNow when it comes to the rollout?
Yeah. So I'll just start by saying I'm totally jazzed with where we are with the rollout of FedNow. In fact, I'm thinking when we first met and we first started talking about doing this podcast, I suggested to you that maybe we'll wait until we hit a milestone. And I think I threw out the number of 500 connected customers. And I recall you saying, well, I don't think I want to wait that long. Why don't we do it sometime
that's
sooner?
Right.
Do you remember?
That's right.
Do I have that right?
I do.
Right?
Yeah, you do remember
okay.
that. Yes.
All right. So, so I'm happy to say today it's 503 is the number. 503 institutions as of this recording. And, you know, I guess the way that I feel about that is, So first of all, I feel very good about where we are, given that we've only been in the market since July of last year. But ultimately, my read of that is what I hear from other people in the industry. And what I generally hear from folks is they're surprised. They're surprised at how quickly we grew the network. And as we've signed up some new customers, what I hear from them is their sense of urgency in signing up was motivated in part by the fact that the number of customers was larger than they expected, at the outset. So overall, I think we are making terrific progress. We have a lot more customers in the pipeline, volume is growing steadily. Of course, it's low because we don't have a complete network yet. But overall, I feel very good about it.
So then, is it fair to say you're above expectations? I mean, when you started rolling this out in July, I'm sure you had goals in place about where you would wanted to be as far as number of banks on board. Are you above, or where are you at?
Yeah, we ended the year above our internal expectations of where we thought we would be. But again, also not really knowing, it's very difficult. But none of us, you know, really have a lot of experience in bringing something completely new to market. The last time we did this was about 50 years ago with ACH. And so you tend to be really good at stuff that you do all the time. Things that you do once every 50 years, you tend to, you know, you don't have a lot of experience on which to base it. So one of the things that we did to try to ensure that we did have a good experience was to invest pretty significantly in digitizing the onboarding experience, the customer onboarding experience, because, you know, we recognized if, you know, with there's 9,200 financial institutions in the United States. If we want to get every single one of them connected, we really don't want a line around, you know, out the door and around the corner. That's not, that's, you know, we really want to avoid that. And so, you know, we were thinking ahead to say, okay, at a certain point in time, demand is going to be very large. How do we ensure that we don't have a line out the front door? Well, you know, digitizing the onboarding experience. So I think so far our record from a bank signing a contract to being live on the platform is 8 days, 8 days from signing the contract to being live on the platform. And that's a result of investing in this digitized onboarding experience. Again, that's not something we've ever done before, but it's an experience that over time, you know, it will spill over into our other payment services where, you know, in some cases we're still relying on people signing pieces of paper and forms and things like that. You know, ultimately that'll all go away.
So did you have people with fintech experience like building this onboarding process? It sounds like a typical fintech problem.
We imported a lot of talent for the FedNow program, both contractors and full-time employees. We also utilized consulting resources, you know, to help augment our skills, because we recognize what we were doing with FedNow is something we've never done before. It's a cloud-native solution. It's 24/7, and it needs to be, you know, meet the same reliability standards of all of our other services. And when you're trying to do something you've never done before, it usually means you need to do something differently than you've done before. And that's the approach that we took in building it.
Okay, so then can you explain the mechanics of how a payment flows through FedNow? Let's assume you've got both a sender and receiver who have activated the capabilities to send and receive. How does it actually work?
Well, at the very highest level, FedNow it's basically a mechanism to enable within seconds and around the clock 24/7 the transfer of money between financial institutions in a manner that's immediate, it's final, and it's irrevocable. That makes it distinct from all of our other services where, say, in the case of ACH, you know, you have message flow that happens, and then you have settlement that happens. This is all, you know, each payment is settling individually as it's made. By nature, then, we refer to them as instant payments because we're talking about the payment settlement happening in a matter of seconds. I think that makes it ideal in a lot of cases for, you know, for use cases where you've got, you know, a situation where a good has been provided or a service has been provided, and the provider of that service wants to make sure that they have good funds available. You know, in a lot of, you know, app-based, you know, payment platforms, you have information flowing, but you don't have settlement flowing. Settlement usually happens, you know, it could be a day or two later. And so there's, you know, an element of risk involved in that. I think that's what really differentiates instant payments because, like I said, the payment and the settlement is happening all at once.
Okay. So then I'm curious about when you're talking with banks, and now you said 500, that's a fantastic milestone. I imagine it makes it easier now that you are being successful in your rollout. But what is your pitch? And I presume you have a different pitch if you're talking to a large bank than you do if you're talking to a much smaller bank.
Well, I think the basic pitch is the same, but I'll get to maybe a little of the difference between a large bank and a small bank. I think the basic pitch is that we live in an instant world. I mean, we're used to getting things instantly. I can go on my computer and access information about anything instantly. I can get anything delivered to my door, you know, within a matter of hours in many cases. But we often find ourselves waiting for payments. Mm-hmm. You know, even in this, you know, instant world, you might be waiting a day, maybe longer than that. And, you know, living in an instant world, if you're a bank, even if your customers aren't necessarily asking for it, the experience that your customers have in every other aspect of their lives is instant. And I think, you know, most people, if they're choosing between something fast and something slow, they'll choose the fast thing. I'm flying later today, and, you know, I'll go to the airport. I'm going to get in the TSA pre-check lane. Why? Because I prefer fast and predictable to slow and uncertain. And I think that same thing applies to the world of payments. And I think, you know, for banks to remain relevant and you know, maintain the customer relationships they've invested so hard in building. You know, providing that kind of instant payment and settlement service to their customers, I think, is important. Now, as it relates to small banks versus big banks, I mean, I think as we think about the Fed offering this service, one of the reasons that we are in this market is because the industry asked us and said, yes, we really think that the Fed should provide an instant payment service. A lot of those comments come from small and medium-sized regional banks that, you know, on a relative basis, just don't have the same resources to invest in technology and that the very largest banks in the country do. And so I see our ability to offer an instant payment service to the very smallest banks, no matter where they are, how remote they might be in the United States, you know, as a really important role for the central bank, that to enable them, to give them a competitive playing field so that they can offer similar products to the very largest banks. The largest banks have, you know, lots of resources that they're investing. The private sector solution, RTP, has been in the market for several years. Many of them are using that. But a lot of small banks, are waiting. We're waiting for the Fed to get in to this business so that they could leverage the Fed the same way they use us for ACH, wire transfer, and cash services.
Right, right. So I presume most banks are signing up initially to receive FedNow. I mean, there is a different technological lift, right, between the send and receive functions. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the differences there and how, like, of the 503, I mean, how many are signing up for both send and receive?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly true that receiving is easier than sending. While all of our connected customers are signed up to receive, it's only a subset of them that are signed up for sending. You know, part of that is due to the technology lift. Part of that is due to preference and wanting to just kind of, you know, crawl or walk before they run a little bit. Part of it is even the technology solutions, the core providers that banks are using, not every platform is equipped for send. So, I mean, I think one thing to keep in mind that I try to keep in mind myself all the time, because I'm naturally an impatient person, is that the market for instant payments is really still in its infancy in the United States. And so, you know, the solutions are not all necessarily equipped with all of the capabilities they need yet. And I think, you know, the industry gaining a little bit of experience will give people a greater sense of confidence, you know, to jump into the sending game as well. Now, having said that, we have some banks that have been sending since day one. In fact, you know, the first transaction was between two credit unions. You know, one credit union who's been very assertive on the send side and being really kind of entrepreneurial and experimental. So we are seeing a fair amount of sending activity, but I expect that to ramp up. I expect that to ramp up this year as the technology solutions become more enabled. And the thinking around use cases, you know, is more well-defined in a lot of these early adopting customers.
So then how should fintech companies think about FedNow? Because obviously fintech companies don't have access to the Fed payment system. They're always working with partner banks. How should fintech companies think about it?
This is one of the reasons that I was eager to come on your podcast and speak with you, because I think we're talking to a lot of fintechs out there. I really view fintechs as playing an important role in two different ways. First, you know, just thinking about financial institutions, you know, every financial institution has some combination of their technology solutions that they've built, that they buy through a service provider, or that they augment, you know, with the capabilities provided by fintechs. And I think, you know, there are a lot of really innovative fintech solutions out there. You know, we have a lot of companies identified even on our FedNow Explorer website that offer solutions that could plug into banks' back-end solutions to more quickly enable functionality that would be useful in leveraging instant payments. But I think that I mentioned two things. I think the second thing is this goes beyond banks. If you think about how all of our other payment services are embedded in the larger business community. You know, every corporation has, you know, a backend system that's feeding payroll or accounts payable or things like that. I mean, for the U.S. economy to get to a point where instant payments are ubiquitously available and broadly used, it's going to require every financial institution to be connected, but it's also going to require every other company, nonprofit, you know, sole proprietorship, whatever, anybody who makes or receives a payment needs to be thinking about instant payments how they can help them meet their strategic objectives and what solutions they're gonna use to do that. So I view all of that as the total addressable market for fintechs to think about. So it's helping to equip banks to enable instant payments, but also helping to enable everyone else in the economy to utilize and fully leverage instant payments. That's a huge opportunity set that I think fintechs are ideally situated to tackle.
Right, right. So what are the primary use cases that are flowing through FedNow right now? When I'm sort of sending a payment or receiving a payment, and I go, oh, wow, look, I got this right away. It's always a surprise to me. When it happens instantly. So what are the use cases that are being used right now?
Early on, I think a lot of the use cases, the dominant use cases that we're seeing are things like account to account transfers, where you may have a primary account and maybe you have a brokerage account or a high yield savings account or something like that. Particularly in this era where interest rates have gone up a little bit, people are moving money around a lot. So we see activity in that area, wallet fundings and defundings or confirmations, like the things that would happen where when you're trying to connect say your checking account to a wallet of some sort. Traditionally, you might make a micro deposit or two and then confirm that. That takes, in some cases, days to get through. Instant payments can enable that to happen immediately and enable funds to move right away. And also, things like earned wage access, paying gig workers, things like that. Those are the kinds of things that we're seeing right now. Having said that, we're having conversations with people about all kinds of other potential use cases. In fact, it's pretty typical if I go to a conference, somebody will pull me aside and say, hey, I've got this great idea for a use case. Or somebody actually just yesterday, somebody reached out to me on LinkedIn. They had some ag related use cases in mind. So I just think there's a lot of creative thinking going on about how they can be used. But right now, the ones that I mentioned are the primary ones we're seeing.
So I want to talk about RTP because obviously it's a private sector initiative. It's been around for several years. Do you see yourself as a competitor to RTP? I mean, what's your relationship there? I'm curious how you think about it.
So yes, we're competitors. The Clearinghouse and David Watson, who runs it, he was a guest on your show not long ago. They are a competitor in the payment space with the Federal Reserve. That we compete vigorously in the check clearing area in ACH, wire transfers, and now in instant payments. I think a lot of people in the financial industry and some of the things that we heard in the public feedback before getting into this business was people appreciate that. They like having competition in this space. We probably tend to make each other sharper, and it probably tends to keep the level of innovation higher than it might be otherwise. So they're a competitor. But having said that, there's a lot of areas where we try to collaborate. So for example, when we introduced FedNow, we didn't want to just do something completely different that would make enablement across the industry difficult. So we both went live with the ISO 20022 format, which is also a format we're adopting for Fedwire next year. So there are areas where we try to collaborate because we share the same objective of getting instant payments to be, like I said, broadly used and ubiquitously available across the United States.
But I presume we're a little ways away, right, from being able to, send with RTP and receive with FedNow if someone's going across banks that aren't members of both?
Yeah, I think that's right. I also think it's exactly the way the wire transfer system works today, where some banks are members of CHIPS, some banks primarily utilize Fedwire, and payments can move both directions. And in the case of the very biggest banks in the country, they think about how one system can back the other up. I think there are definite resilience benefits to having two players in the marketplace. I think that the biggest issue that we're trying to tackle right now is the fact that between the two of us, we have several hundred institutions connected to instant payments. We need many thousands of banks connected to instant payments. That's the primary presenting challenge that we need to tackle in the next few years.
Okay, so then you're not out to crush RTP then, right? You want them to be successful as well as FedNow to be successful. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that will mirror exactly what happens in all of our other payment rails. In ACH and wire and check, we're both successful. I think our target markets are a bit different, and I see room for both of us in this marketplace.
Okay, so I want to talk about the mix of payment mechanisms that we have today. We have cash, card, check, ACH, wire, and now instant payment. You talked about some of those at the beginning of this interview. I'm curious about how you expect this mix to change over the coming decade. Cash seems to be resilient, checks are still going. How do you expect that mix of all the different payment methods to change?
This is the question I'm probably most afraid of answering because you're recording it and you'll be able to play it back 10 years from now. I mean, honestly, I think this is absolutely going to be fascinating to watch. And I don't think any of us know what the answer is, but I'll tell you what I think, what my gut tells me, my informed gut view, you know, based on everything that I see. So first of all, I think that the total number of payments made in the United States is going to grow. And I think it's going to grow pretty significantly. And I think that because once payments, and particularly instant payments, are really easy, you know, they're easy and they're broadly available, I think more payments will be made. You know, I think about this even as I order things online from Amazon. You know, you might have at one point in time gone to the bookstore once a month or gone to the drugstore, you know, once a week or something like that. Now you just order things anytime you want. And so the total number of transactions actually is going up. And I think the total number of payments will increase pretty significantly. I think that, you know, my own view is that cash demand will continue to rise, but transactional usage will likely decline further. It's been declining over the past several years, even as demand for cash rises, because people like that money in their, you know, in their house just in case, particularly in the case of natural disasters. I think that we'll see some payments move from wire transfers and ACH into instant payments. You know, for example, in the wire transfer space, we see a fair number of wire transfers that are relatively low dollar amounts. I think they're in the wire transfer space today because there isn't a great alternative. As we introduce a great alternative, I expect some of those payments to move. And I suspect some ACH payments will move also, although I don't expect like things like large corporate payroll, you know, systems with highly predictable payments. Those are really well suited for ACH, and I wouldn't expect those to move. But I would expect, you know, some kinds of payroll payments, like I mentioned earlier, shift workers, you know, gig workers, some of those kinds of payments to move. You know, finally, with respect to check, my hope, and it's not because I, you know, harbor any ill will against anyone, but I really think that check is a case where many of those payments would be better suited for instant payments, but it's going to take some work to get there. So I would hope over the next 10 years, we see the total number of checks written decline pretty significantly, recognizing that's going to be a heavy lift.
You see these headlines, instant payments means instant fraud. What are the anti-fraud tools that you're putting in place and the banks that are using FedNow putting in place to prevent instant fraud?
You know, one thing that I would just say at the outset is, you know, fraud isn't limited to the instant payments world.
Right,
in fact,
of course.
You know, when I talk about checks declining, I think banks right now are going to be motivated to really think about instant payments as a way to combat fraud that they're experiencing, because instant payments are electronic and immediate. It's not, you know, checks are mailed across the, you know, the state or the country. And, you know, I think a lot of people are experiencing, you know, check fraud via mail theft and things like that. So instant payments can solve some cases of fraud. Now, as it relates to fraud and the tools that we have in place, we put in a core set of tools at launch that enable banks to do things like, you know, set transaction limits that are lower than the network level ones. And also one really important thing that we did at the outset was require anybody on the FedNow platform to report any fraudulent transaction that they receive. That'll enable us to start building a database of any fraudulent transaction and the characteristics of it. So over time, you know, we'll have a sense and be able to deter fraud in a way that we couldn't, you know, at the outset. You know, we have plans to introduce additional controls, risk mitigation tools, you know, things to give banks tools to augment their own fraud control mechanisms. I think banks on both the sending and the receiving side, they all have, you know your customer systems and fraud control tools that we see in, you know, as our role in the middle of this, you know, as a payment operator, being able to augment, but not you know, replace the tools that they'll be able to do, because they actually know the people on both sides of the transaction.
So what are the transaction limits that you impose as the entity that runs the network?
So we're at $500,000 right now at launch, and banks can set that lower if they choose to.
Okay, so then I'm curious about sort of the short term here, like the rest of 2024. I mean, are you adding new features? I mean, how are you kind of thinking about the product roadmap for FedNow?
There's a number of things we have, you know, on the horizon. You know, one thing is that I mentioned is, you know, additional risk mitigation tools. So we're thinking about things like additional threshold, payment threshold or velocity controls that banks will be able to customize. So maybe they have different levels for business accounts versus personal accounts for, you know, things of that nature. Another thing that we're pretty excited about is, you know, we're building a developer portal that will enable banks, the technical resources at banks to, you know, to interact with our own technology folks, things like, you know, being able to look at you know, code samples or message formats or things like that. That's not something we've ever made available for any of our other services, but I actually think it could, you know, really be a further enablement tool to again to continue promoting utilization of the FedNow network once people get on board.
Okay, so in closing, I've got a two-part question. In closing here, I want to say first, like, what's it going to look like? Let's go out, say, 5 years' time. We're going to talk 2029. It's strange. That actually is only 5 years away.
But I'm still having a hard time believing it's almost March. So, you know. Yes.
Anyway, so in 5 years' time, in 2029, what's it going to look like for you to consider FedNow to have been a long-term success story? So that's one part of the question. And two, when do you think we're going to hit this kind of hump where it becomes like part of the consumer expectation? Because right now, consumers do not expect instant payments. And oftentimes they're tricked into thinking they're receiving instant payments because Venmo and PayPal and those things provide instant-like payments, but you know, not actually moving funds instantly. But two parts to that question. I'd love to kind of get your perspective there.
So I think, you know, 5 years, when I think about the adoption of instant payments, one of the things I started doing is looking backwards. And I think it probably took us, I don't know, probably close to 20 years to reach ubiquitous availability and adoption on the ACH network. And then, yeah, I talked with our team and I said, you know, if it took us 20 for ACH, you know, we don't have 20 years. I mean, I think we have five. Let's think about 5 years as a reasonable time horizon for the United States to achieve ubiquitously availability of instant payments. Easy for me to say. I mean, that's going to be hard, but I think that should be our shared objective nationally, because I think that the benefits to individual households and businesses are really great if we can do that. So I'll go out on a limb and say in 5 years, every financial institution will be equipped to at least receive instant payments, and many should be equipped to send them as well. Businesses across the country will have started to think about how they can use instant payments to provide better service, whether it's instant settlement payments for insurance payouts or things like that, or we're more quickly getting money into the hands of consumers when they're owed. I think closing that kind of time money gap for consumers is something that I really have a lot of hope that 5 years from now, that gap between when someone has earned money and when they have access to that money, I think that'd be really powerful.
Do you think that's sort of the time where we're going to go over the hump and the expectation will shift from 2-day time horizon to an instant time horizon?
Yeah. So I think that we'll get to that point when two things happen. One is, I've said this a couple of times, I'm really counting on FOMO within the financial community. If you're a bank that's not sure about this, but you know, the bank across the street is offering it, you know, that's maybe a dangerous position to be in just from a competitive standpoint. So I think as the number of institutions steadily climbs, I'm really counting on FOMO. I think the other thing is we just need to talk about success stories and talk in story terms about what instant payments are and how they work and how they're better. One of my colleagues had her house flooded a few years ago, and the insurance company FedExed her a check. And when she went to go clear out their you know, all of their damaged furnishings and things like that, they found the FedEx envelope the workers were using as a doormat going in and out of the house. And that's not a good payment experience. That's not a good user experience. It's just not a good experience for anybody. And I think there are, the world is just a target-rich set of opportunities like that, that we will all discover. That's when the tipping point will be, when people realize we've been doing this a certain way for a really long time, and the consumer experience and the business experience is not what it could be with instant payments.
Okay, well, I look forward to that day, Mark. I really appreciate you coming on the show today. Important work you're doing here, and best of luck with the continued rollout.
Thanks very much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for listening. Please go ahead and give the show a review on the podcast platform of your choice, and go tell your friends and colleagues about it. Anyway, on that note, I will sign off. I very much appreciate you listening, and I'll catch you next time. Bye.